Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me once again this Sunday evening, hey, it's everyone's favorite concerned citizen, it's Brian. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, still in recovery mode, but, you know, each week is less pain but more annoyance, basically. But, you know, that's just going to be the name of the game for October and November for me this year. But, you know, considering the year that most of us have had, you know, I feel weird complaining about it. So at least there's TV, if nothing else.
Yeah, at least we got some good TV to talk about.
Yeah, damn straight. And, of course, that is why we're here tonight, because people don't tune in to listen to, you know, me whine about my foot. They want to hear us talk about the latest episode of Fargo, which was the seventh episode of the season, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
Yeah, amazing. All the notes I put, and I forgot to write that. But I do know that the title was Layaway. And for a change, I did remember to check about the writing and the directing of this one. Once again, this is directed by Dana Gonzalez, who's directed a few in a row here. Almost as, if not more importantly, the episode was actually written by Scott Wilson and Enzo Meletti, or Meletti, who also co-wrote last week's episode, Camp Elegance. So I feel that I didn't check it last week, and I just assumed it was Noah Hawley. So let me correct myself right now. It was not Mr. Hawley. It was these two gentlemen. So for all the people who are keeping track of such things on your Fargo scorecards, there you go. And maybe by not having Noah Hawley write the episodes, hey, do you think that's maybe why we got two normal length episodes in a row?
Maybe.
You think that might have a little something to do with it? I think so. So yeah, this was, a nice brisk episode that, you know, certainly was moving forward with, you know, plot and character together. Got some fun moments, got some interesting moments, got some head scratching moments too. All of which adds up to a pretty decent hour's worth of television. One thing I kind of liked, I just have an eye for the visual for whenever it's a Hawley show like this one, you know, I think we're always going to be specially attuned to the visuals. You know, whether they do more inventive split screening or anything like that. Like, I like that they did yet another way of doing the opening title graphic. Because I don't think they've done it quite like that before. Or maybe they have done something similar to that. I might be wrong about that. But it's just different than what Fargo normally does, quite frankly.
Yeah, that jumped out to me too.
Of course, by my saying it's different than what Fargo normally does, it kind of almost feeds into the criticism I've seen some people have of this season, where it's almost like the backhanded compliment. Like, I really like it, but it's not Fargo. And I don't mean to mock me, but I should not have done a voice for that. Because that's, you know what? That is a valid comment. I can see why they're saying that. Because it's true to a large extent. It is, for the most part, a departure from the type of story structure we've had for the previous three seasons. Although I think we've both noted, there are still a considerable number of, you know, Fargo-isms on the series. And quite frankly, I think we talk about this all the time, when Hawley's doing these episodes or, you know, putting this show together, it's not just, you know, Fargo. It's how many other Coen brother things can we reference and pack into the show from season to season? So, you know, as we've spoken about on previous podcasts, you know, we're seeing a lot of Miller's Crossing this season. How can you not? You know, Coen brothers did a gangster movie. This is about gangsters. Bingo. Yeah. But we let off with Arietta this week. And I noticed it when she was doing her baking and, you know, you always keep your eye open. Okay, what's the ingredient that doesn't make sense on that table? Because that's going to be the thing that's going to be lethal. And I noticed she had Gauze-Tex there. And That sounds just like what it is. It's basically, it's a self-adhering bandage. She mixed that into the macaroons, apparently. And if you think about what could happen if you were to swallow that, it makes perfect sense what happens to Dr. Harford, because it basically chokes him to death.
Yeah, I saw that, and, you know, it's funny, when she started making it in my head, I went, I wonder if this is finally the macaroons, and sure enough, it was.
Oh, it could, because after last week, you know, I think she's back to her, you know, multiple killing ways, and now it's not, no longer about, you know, mercy killing at this point. I mean, one guy she killed because he was whining from gout, which may do a lot of things to you, but chances are you're not going to die from gout.
Right.
And now Dr. Harford, she was able to accomplish what multiple gangsters were and were not able to do. And it's funny because I think to a large extent, the reason for her to doing this was just to get to that letter. And then the letter, you know, it says, you know, sign a concerned citizen. Although I think we all believe she kind of suspects who did it anyway.
Right.
I did, and speaking of visuals, once again, there was that nice shot, that view of Arietta from Dr. Harvard's dying perspective, which gave, you know, I don't know. I couldn't make up my mind. Is this a heavenly vision or a hellish vision based on the hues that were involved? And, you know, the almost a silhouetted form of a nurse, a literal angel of mercy in front of him. I thought that was kind of a nice little visual they added there that they didn't have to do, but it's Fargo, so they have to.
Yeah, it was nice. And it's, you know, we've always alluded to, there's a little bit of a mystic supernatural flourish to this, and they sort of bleed in the red and that color around her. I think, you know, you can take her as an angel of mercy or angel of death. And I think in that moment it shows both. So it was a great visual. And once again, she sort of drifts in the story and disappears. And I think that sort of our criticism, if any, and not to criticize the show too much, because I enjoyed this episode, but there are just so many characters that in some episodes the character just gets a minute or two and that's it, and the story moves on to other stuff.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny, after we recorded last week, because again, especially last week, we recorded pretty quickly after the episode ended, because it's usually at least a half an hour or more after the episode's over. Sometimes you and I might speak for a little while before we start recording. But that one was super quick. So I actually, for a change, read, after we had recorded, I read Seppenwall's take on the episode later on that night, because I think he releases, most critics have seen I believe they've all seen the first 9 episodes. They just haven't seen the final 2, from what I understand. And that way, that's why they're able to get their entire, sometimes beautifully written write-ups done, you know, within minutes, because no one can write that fast. Yeah, it's because he probably watched this episode days ago, weeks ago even. But what was kind of cool, and I was like giving us both like a little pat on our back or head or whatever, is the criticisms that I had brought up and we were talking about last week, he brought up. It was fascinating, because it was like almost like point for point the issues that we were having. Still enjoying the episode regardless, but not blind to the problems of the show. And that was the one, and a lot of us, what we were talking about was, you know, suddenly trying to build up the Altoon character for it to have more meaning or significance, the fact he was going to be killed at the end of the episode. And the problem was, he was pretty much little more than a background character for the first 5 episodes. And to suddenly like raise him up in prominence in one episode just to kill him, and it's supposed to have any kind of emotional impact, kind of doesn't work too well. It's still a cool episode, but it just doesn't have the oomph that it probably should have had. And so this episode, you know, we get a lot of back and forth, you know, with Loy as well as Josto. I mean, obviously we could kind of do it in, you know, quote unquote chronological order, but I don't know how vital it is. It almost lends itself to it though, because it's a very straightforward episode, because you kind of can see the wheels turn, especially with Josto, you can kind of see how the wheels are turning and you start realizing that, although he might be, he's certainly a lot goofier a character than Loy, whatever it be, he's more calculating than I think we would have given him credit for initially.
He seems almost too confident that he's, there's some place he's gotten confidence and put this plan together.
Yeah.
And he's executing it, so much so that, you know, he's even contradicting his consigliere in the meeting with Loy.
Right.
And going directly against New York. And he seems very confident and to go in and do what he did, knowing he could very well be killed, shot. I mean, he doesn't seem that concerned that would happen. I think he's taken some measure of Loy and makes a pretty dangerous gamble, but thinks by the time he's left, it works out. And, he's, you know, I think he's definitely, at least on the outside, seemingly more competent as this season goes on.
Yes.
And seems to be very sure of the moves he's making here.
Which, and, you know, I would say, as much as I enjoy Schwartzman being as goofy as all that, because that's what I know him for everything from, you know, going back to everything from Rushmore all the way through that great little scene HBO series, Bored to Death. Ah, so good. But, you know, when it's funny because they don't hit you with it too quickly. Because initially, you know, you have when Josto and, you know, Constant or Calamita, however, I never know if I should refer to him by his first name or last name because they're both fun. When they're standing over the body of Antoon, you know, at that point, it seems like, oh, Josto's going to go, he's going ballistic. He wants Constant just to kill all of them, you know, go there, kill them, kill the family, kill the kid, whatever. And that seemed like such a, whoa, that's kind of a big reckless move. Duh, should have realized what he was up to, but we see in the meeting, you know, when he, you know, like you said, contradicting his, you know, not contradicting, just, you know, superseding his consigliere there and trying to put a plan into motion where he's going to get Loy to do his dirty work for him. Because if Loy is the one who ends up doing this stuff, well, New York's not necessarily going to come after him as much as they're going to come after Loy, because if he's the one who's responsible for killing Gaetano, because they can spin it any way they want to New York. At least I believe that's what he thinks he's going to try to do. Whether it would have worked or not, who knows? Of course, you know, we're not going to know because Loy kind of sort of sees through it to a certain degree. He certainly sees through it enough to not go along with it. It's like, no. I'm gonna take your initial deal, but I'm not gonna do your dirty work for you, because I think it's almost like he's setting off a bomb himself, because he even tells Gaetano that your brother wanted me to kill you,
right?
But I'm gonna let you go, so that, you know, it's just like, okay, let's wind up this ticking time bomb and throw that grenade back at the Fadas. One of the things I really liked about the episode overall. And it reminds me of certain television series and movies as well. And when they can achieve this, I kind of enjoy it. Because it's almost like that visceral feeling when you're almost want to yell at the screen, like, no, that's not true. No, whatever. And there's a lot of that going on in this episode. I mean, obviously, you know, with the lies about Satchel being dead, and we know that he's not. And the rabbi too, but it's more about because of Loy's reaction and having to tell his wife, and everything he's going to do now is predicated on the fact that they killed his son, when in fact they didn't. I enjoy that. It's indicative, you know, and hey, that's a Fargoism, quite frankly. It's characters operating on misinformation that if they only knew the truth, they would never do what they're about to do.
Right.
You know, but you know, that goes back. You can think of any number of shows that have done that. You know, The Sopranos certainly did that a whole lot, if I recall. See, another gangster show. But it works really well here. It was funny when I know the scene when Calamita shows up at Loy's place and the wife answers the door. I will admit, and I'm stupid for thinking this, I did have that moment where I thought, wait, could she shoot him? That would be kind of an unexpected thing to happen. I kept thinking, no, that's not going to work, dramatically speaking. And he's certainly not going to get in there and kill them. So it almost had to be like a little standoff kind of situation there. But I like that we got to see her in action again, because that actress, as we saw in that scene between her and Law in a previous episode, she's really good.
Yeah, she really is.
And again, speaking of good, Chris Rock, on one hand, I really am enjoying him and his character. Absolutely. But again, there's just something about, and maybe it's because we've watched a number of hours of Chris Rock on stage, that even when he's about to beat the crap out of that guy, Leon, thinking, Happy's cousin, I think his name is Leon, whatever. And they're arguing early on about killing Gaetano, and he keeps saying, like, say his name, whatever, or he's talking about, the process of going to war. That is a Chris Rock stand-up delivery. You know, step one, step two, how do you think I should do that? Tell me how. The whole way he was doing it, I was like, oh, this is, he's borderline almost out of character here. He's borderline doing himself here, but it worked in the confines of the scene. And because they keep giving Loy these moments where he's basically doing virtually a monologue, he's having scenes where he's doing almost all the talking. It's like he's doing stand up. It's very similar to that, you know?
Yeah, it's real good. And, I think on the opposite end of that, when he finally talks to Gaetano and sets him free, and the way he dials down his performance in that scene,
yep,
is probably the more impressive of the two bits of acting. Because when he sits on that bench and just talks to him, after what had been said and gone on before, when he just sort of calmly explains what he's doing and basically sets him off to say, I'm going to go set you off and you need to know your brother did this.
Right.
Because, Gaetano's the emotional one. So he backs off his emotion. I thought those were nice pieces of acting on both ends of that spectrum. And he gets some of the best lines in this, that America is a dream, and that's why it's easy to fleece, suckers.
Yeah, in America, people want to believe because they got that dream, and a dreamer you can fleece, right?
Yeah.
That scene, I do, one of my favorite scenes in the entire episode, absolutely, if not my favorite scene, is the scene with Otis. Again, it's him doing, it's a monologue. But you know what? Performance aside, it's just great words. It's just the dialogue. Yeah. It's so right there. And there's been a running theme throughout this season with people talking about America, about the dream, about what they believe. I feel like this is the third time, at least, if not fourth, where someone has gone on about America in this season, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's a recurring theme, and talking about how if he gets down in the dirt, then he'll always be what they've said he is, an animal. And there's an interesting subtext this whole season of immigration and what it means to be an American, and we've had those discussions before, but you see him really make a good decision. And I thought the surprising thing to me in this episode was, as far along as we are, people are operating with bad information. Mm-hmm. But in this episode, almost everyone makes a good decision based on the information they have. And that's unusual. If you think about it, I mean, no one really made a bad decision based on the information they have. It would be terrible for Giusto to just take Gaetano back. Gaetano wants to kill him. He's never going to be faithful to him. If Loy kills Gaetano himself, he knows New York can come down on him. And even at the end, Loy does order the killing of Calamita because he's been given permission. And the consigliere himself said there are people you can kill and people you can't. You can't kill Gaetano.
Right.
As everything that's happened to Loy, you could see him making a worse decision than one he did. We see Otis finally say, maybe it's time for me to cut bait. Like, I'm in an unwinnable situation here. And unfortunately just doesn't get out the door in time. We see Deffy play his hand very well. He knows now's the time to rattle Otis. Because Otis is playing him along and he's got it figured out. And, I can't really think of a character that made a bad decision. You could argue that he should have killed Gaetano. And I do like the one man who says, he's an eye for eye guy. And he goes, you got to kill him. Can't let him. And when they walk in the room, he goes, you can't let him walk out of here.
Right.
But I thought by and large, like, there wasn't a lot of really bad decisions made here. I think most everybody based in the position they were in made pretty good decisions, and Loy's decision's particularly interesting. And that's probably the biggest thing. We see the Cain and Abel. Do you let the brothers kill each other? Do you kill the brother? What does that mean? And probably the other most interesting aspect to me that I really liked Rock's performance in was you see him contemplate, and and clearly a Fargo callback to No Country from Old Men. We see, someone standing outside a door almost killing someone, and the person walks out and they're gone.
Yes, right. When he's considering killing
Zero.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we get sort of a Coen Brothers nod there.
Right.
But in that moment, you understand why he wants to do it. But ultimately he does, he makes a good decision. It's better to have Zero alive, even if you just cynically look at it from having, another asset.
Right.
It was a crisp moving episode. Lots happened. But I thought most of the characters really make good decisions, which is surprising this far into a season on Fargo.
I guess the only one that I could be at least moderately skeptical about was who we spoke about at the very beginning, was what Giusto decides to do. Either he overplays his hand there, or he's taking just a bit too big a risk with the information. Because, like, for example, at this point, he's telling him, one element of the gamble is he's telling him that Satchel is dead. And then, by the way, so is Rabbi. But he doesn't know, as far as he knows, they're not. He knows he sent Calamita to try to hunt them down. He doesn't know he has no idea if he'll be able to. He doesn't know where they are. They could show up there the very next day.
Right.
And that would kind of blow up everything he just told him. I thought he was going to lose it a little bit when Loy questioned it by saying he wanted to see the body, and was kind of, by sheer luck that they, that the conversation didn't stay on that track. But beyond that, I think you're spot on about that. I did enjoy the stuff between Deffy and Otis. Which is really just, it's really just Oliphant doing his thing. He's not so much, I mean, again, it's more Raylan than it is than it is Deadwood, unless you throw in the pious religiosity, which may be more of an aspect of the Bullock character. But goddamn, if it isn't fun!
Oh, it's great, and that scene inspired me to do one little bit of research in the short time before we started recording, and that is to look up the history of Blood Atonement. And it's apparently was a fairly orthodox view of early Mormonism. Mm-hmm. That basically when Jesus died, you know, your sins are forgiven if you ask for forgiveness, but there were certain classes of sins that alone would not get you into heaven to ask for forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And murder is one of them. That this was one of the underpinnings of the belief of capital execution in Utah, that, you know, if you commit murder, the belief was if you ask Jesus forgiveness and we spill your blood, then you can go to heaven. But you can't without that. And he talks to Otis about blood atonement. And so, Deffy's got a pretty dark view of the world, despite not using profanity. But you also see he's very shrewd. He's picked Yes. up and followed all the players. He knows where the women have went. He knows who the players are, where they're going.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. That's exactly where I was going to go. He seems to be playing the observer, and he's seen a lot. And I love that he just basically finally just decided just to blow up Otis's spot and say, and basically let him know, like, yeah, I know what you've been doing. I know you've been, you know, you, and he says it in a number of florid ways, which none of which I wrote down, but you know, we know that, you know, he's a cop on the take essentially. And it was kind of funny because I believed, and you know, it could still happen. Not as far as this episode is concerned, but it could conceivably happen in the future if they decide to go a way which may be conventional, and that might be why they don't do this at all. Because the only note I wrote about that was like, so much for Deffy rehabilitating Otis, at least at this point. And good gosh, I'm talking like him now, I'm not Carson. My favorite little moment, and if you've been enjoying the previous six episodes, especially the first time we met, the first episode we really met Deffy for, you know, a considerable amount of time, when Otis says to him, what did you say to me? It's like, no, that's my trick. You heard me just fine.
Yeah.
And I'm like going, yeah, we haven't heard him do that shtick again, which is fine because we know it's going to be said again at some point before this season is over. But I really got a big kick out of that.
Yeah, I love that. And he's clearly in control, knows he's rattled Otis. And it was really good. And Otis is, you know, there are all these wild cards that are going to have to be played soon. Otis is one. Yep. We, you know, the question, I guess the question I have, and I thought it was a nice bit of writing that it didn't beat us over the head, but when Lloyd tells Zelmer and Swanee to get on the train to Philadelphia, mm-hmm. She says, well, what if we want to stay? And all he says is, do you love your sister?
It's the first and only time we've seen them kind of, you know, kind of take a step back and be like, oh, okay, you know, that he does have something over them, because that they would be putting her sister's life at risk. I thought that was a nice little moment myself.
Yeah, just one little line, and all their swagger and cockiness sort of drops. Right. But he also says, you know, I don't want to be responsible for your death, like. You know, you did what I wanted you to do. Now get gone.
Right.
And
he shifts from being noble to making it clear, but I will kill whoever I have to.
Right.
No, you know, literally within the same breath. I love that. I keep calling them the two Bonnies because it's just easier than trying to remember their actual names. Probably one of the only other little mystery little things in the episode. We did have that brief moment at the funeral home, and we actually see Ethelria there as well. And it look, I guess Loy's men are now just using that almost as like, you know, just an additional, you know, storage space for their, you know, illegal goods. I guess, I don't know if that's liquor or what. I wasn't looking too closely at it because I didn't think it was overly relevant. But there is a moment when you realize, hey, there's somebody hiding in the coffin. And then they're not. And then we never go back. I mean, they're not. We never go back to it. And I'm trying to figure out who it might be. I mean, there's a few possibilities. It's just a question of, you know, the first people that come to mind. It's part of it is like, why would they go there other than it being, well, maybe that might be the last place people would think to look. I mean, do you think it might? I mean, we talked about it for a moment before we started recording. I think you thought it was you think it was a smaller coffin than normal, because I thought it was a regular size. But
it looked to my eye a little smaller than like a full size coffin. Now, it could be that's appropriate to that time period, and maybe, you know, my sensibility is that it just seems smaller. But mm-hmm. you know, my thought is it's either. You know, that they're sometimes you hide in the place people least expect. So could it be Satchel?
Satchel would be my first thought. Yes.
You know, but the other guess is if you want to think Fargo, it could be Orietta, hiding in the coffin, wait until everybody leaves and the house is empty to go after Ethel Rita. And, so those would be my two guesses. Satchel was my first thought, but I also thought, it could be Orietta. So.
Orietta in a weird way would probably make more sense, especially since they show that the place is just wide open. So she could have just kind of crept in and just, you know, stashed herself in there for the time being. Whereas the Satchel situation might be a bit more difficult. There would just be a lot more steps that have to be taken, and, you know, how he would be there, you know, who would know he was, you know, where's the rabbi, you know. Or we'd have to get a whole flashback of how, you know, he arrived there and how they got the okay. But, you know, it would be more complicated if it was him. Doesn't mean it's not. I hadn't thought of Orietta. And that's, once you said that, it's kind of obvious, especially since she lives right across the street.
So, right.
She could just be watching. I was like, oh, the door is open. That would probably make the most sense. We shall, or, you know, she just needs to get in the kitchen and just, you know, just mix something into whatever they got in the fridge. That's all.
Go get some formaldehyde downstairs. Go to work.
There you go. Let's see. Was there anything else? I feel, we didn't get through that whole episode already, did we? I mean, it was a quick episode, but I can't believe we got through it that fast. Had a little multi-screen montage. Don't need to talk about that. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, everything else is, we also got some, for a few different characters, got these little moments. One of them was, I kind of just said it while I was spinning through my notes here, you know, that odd little multi-screen montage of Gaetano and Giusto. Well, I think that's before Giusto arrives at the meeting, if I'm not mistaken. So you have a little thing like that. We also have that scene later on with Loy, you know, memories of his son, and, you know, while he's riding in the car and all that. And, the scene that he has with his son, was that, I'm trying to remember, was that something you think they filmed just for this, or was that from one of the earlier episodes? I know that Don is there, but it doesn't mean they this isn't a memory we hadn't seen before. Do you remember
I think we saw a part of that, but I don't think we saw it. I think that was like more an extended cut of what happened earlier. And I'm just going to guess that because they expanded this season by an episode, that there probably were decisions made to cut these in a different way.
Right.
That probably would have been sequential, but for the way they've structured this season. And I will say I'm getting excited because from what I've read, there's an episode coming up sometime soon, that supposedly is just, you know, bonkers, to use a Deffy word and not to not, you know, usually we would say stuff like batshit crazy, but you know, so if we're honoring Deffy, we would say crazy or bonkers. But I think that there were decisions made that probably have structured flashbacks and things that might have been done in a more conventional way,
right?
In a normal season.
Yeah. Okay. I believe that. Yeah. The only other things of any note, whether it be story, character, or just plain old visuals. I mean, I did like the touch of Otis packing up. I mean, he's remembering his girl, because there's that moment where we see him. He's got his head on a woman's lap. And if you didn't remember the photo of his girlfriend in a previous episode, for a few seconds there, you'd be like, wait, Otis got a girlfriend? And then you realize it's him remembering because he's looking at the photo before he starts packing up the Hummels one by one, wrapped in little napkins, and take it from a collector. Yeah, that's kind of the way we do things. And and finally, the other thing was right after Loy had his little, was remembering his son while I was driving in the car. And then he tells, I don't remember if it's Opal who's driving the car. That's the guy who said, you know, the eye for the eye fellow there. Then they stop the car and they get out and they see that billboard for the Diners Club credit card. So you already get a sense like, hey, that idea you had. Now, it's one of those things, is it just simply you got beaten to the, well, it's probably more, obviously it's more likely you just got beaten to the punch, but you were the guys who had this idea and the bank refused you, and then you get into the whole major racial aspect of the season, whatever. I don't think they're inferring that the Diners Club thing got wind of his idea and ripped him off. I think that would be a bit of a stretch. But it's just that he could have been the first one out there with this idea, and he, you know, because he wasn't able to move forward with it, now someone else has come and filled that space. Trust me, being a writer, I've had situations I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah, but I think it's in that moment, it's a callback, because he's suffering with this episode, particularly the loss of Dr. Senator, and thinking of their idea.
That's true. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's why you're on the podcast.
And I wondered why he was pulling over, because I mean, I'll be honest with you, the whole episode, I was thinking at that moment, like, man, there's been so many good decisions. Is he about to make a really bad one? and it's not. It's just this thing where you get a pensive moment of seeing this thing that's kind of a poignant reminder of where, you know, he started the journey with Dr. Senator. And I almost wonder if, in a way, that didn't pull him back to being more thoughtful and not being impulsive or angry, that wasn't some sort of sign from Dr. Senator to be smart. And
I would take it that way. Being smart and pragmatic as opposed to being, you know, vengeful, which he would certainly, even after Dr. Senator, he would certainly have the right to be. But after now being told his son has been killed, I mean, you couldn't blame the guy. Excuse me. So, yeah, good, brisk, well, you know, solid moving episode. I am looking forward to them actually hunting down Kalamita. I don't know if that'll happen. How quickly that'll happen, but we only got four episodes left, so that could be happening sooner than later. I don't know if they're going to push that to the final episode. I kind of doubt that, but another good one, solid, quick. I liked it.
Yeah, I did too, and I will say, I think the thing we want to see in Fargo often is the thing that doesn't happen.
Right.
It would be funny if the person that skates from the Fadas is Kalamita, because he's just such a jerk, and you know. And this episode, menacing of a woman and children, right. And I guess the last thing I would add is perhaps we see he's on a path with Rabbi Milligan, because he sees that scrap of paper in that journal. Looks like he finds in the book. So if anybody kills Kalamita, him menacing, Satchel, it Rabbi Milligan taking him out would be satisfying.
Yeah. I'm going to say, I'm going to, I'm gonna step to the 3-point line, whatever you call that thing in that basketball thing, sport, whatever. And I'm gonna say Satchel ends up killing him.
That would be his first. That would be awesome to set him on his eventual path. Yeah, that's.
I'm gonna say it's.
You know what?
Satchel, AKA Mike.
Yep. Yeah, that's I like that call.
Yeah, that's where I'm gonna go with it, and because I think right now I'll be surprised if any adult person survives the season. Quite frankly. Alrighty then. So I will start wrapping things up where if you like this podcast, guess what? You'll like hanging out on our podcast page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page and you can enjoy conversations about shows like Fargo and so many others. You can also find us on, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe to our feed there where you can rate and review us. We are now on Stitcher. So, and I don't know if just telling you to go to Stitcher.com means you'll be able to find us because we're kind of new there and, you know, I don't think anyone's downloaded us there as of yet. So I'll just, it's a little bit wordy, but the entire alias to get to our page, you know, it's Stitcher.com/podcast/the-serious-the-TV-drama-podcast. And let's see what else. But of course, you can still go to stvdpodcast.podbean.com for all 281 of our podcast episodes can be found there, as well as all the beautiful artwork that I've done for, you know, about 270 something of them. And finally, you can follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @stvdpodcast. STVD as in Serious TV Drama. Brian and I will be back. Once again, we will be recording next Sunday. Hoping the world will have shifted into a positive place between now and then. That's the only inference I'm going to make there. Other than, if you haven't already, make sure you vote on Tuesday. If you haven't been one of the millions who've early voted, me and my bum foot, I couldn't, but I'm going to hobble over on Tuesday to do it. So make sure you guys do that. But Brian and I will be recording Sunday for the next Fargo. But also do not forget, we actually have another series of special podcasts we're doing, you know, on the same brand, so to speak, you know, the greatest TV drama episodes of all time. We've already released two episodes, number 20, which was an episode of House called House's Head, and number 19, which was an episode of Dexter, the season 4 finale, which was The Getaway. And this Friday, the episode will be an episode of the show Firefly, the 8th episode of their only season called Out of Gas. So if you haven't watched Firefly yet, you know what? You've got time to binge it because it's 14 episodes in a movie. You can manage it. You know, but most importantly, make sure you watch the 8th episode Out of Gas because I will be joined by Court Robinson to talk about that, and that will be released on Friday. So that's it for me. Brian, as always, thank you so much for joining me on yet another trip to Fargo. So I'll say goodnight to you. Goodnight to everybody out there. And as I have been doing as of late, somewhat, I will let you have the last word.
Well, I really enjoyed the episode. It was brisk. Look forward to next week, and I hope everyone goes out and votes. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week.